Good morning. It's 9 minutes after 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm in for Joy Cardine this hour. Joy will be back this morning, as a matter of fact. You can expect her here at 8 o'clock for the Week in Review. This hour, we're going to be taking a look at the idea of a so-called bailout for the U.S. auto industry. There is no shortage of suffering in a whole variety of industries these days around the country, but the auto industry has been particularly hard hit. High fuel prices, tightening credit, and in a lot of cases, the wrong type of vehicles being marketed have combined for slumping sales and big losses for all automakers, but particularly for the big three American automakers. As other industries have been bailed out by the federal government, those big three, GM, Ford, and Chrysler, are now lining up for their share, arguing in part that they are too big, too important to fail, and that without help, they could do just that, or at the very least, wind up in bankruptcy of some kind. Our guest this hour is Daniel Eikenson with Cato Institute. He is the director of trade studies there. He says if taxpayers are going to be forced to subsidize car manufacturers, at the very least, they should be able to subsidize the successful ones. And he says Detroit's automakers are far from that. Where are you on this issue? Of course, Wisconsin has been affected in a very direct way by the problems facing the auto industry, the closing of the Janesville GM plant, for example. In your estimation, does that industry, the auto industry, deserve to be bailed out? Does it, in effect, deserve your tax dollars, your help? Join the discussion at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Don't forget, email works great, too, and our address is talk@wpr.org. Another great way to get on the air, talk@wpr.org. Dan Eikenson, good morning. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you for having me on.
Good having you along. Well, first of all, let's talk about the whole notion of a bailout. And in general, the Cato Institute, are you in favor of bailouts in any case, or is this specific to the auto industry that we're talking about?
No, I don't think taxpayers should ever be on the line to bail out private companies. They most emphatically should not be on the line to bail out companies that have made bad decisions. I think the big three has made some very bad decisions over the past couple of decades. And we shouldn't be bailing them out. And quite frankly, I don't really think they need a bailout. I think the best solution in this case would be to allow one of them to actually go bankrupt and liquidate. And I think that would make matters a lot better for the remaining two, as well as the other half of the U.S. auto industry, which composes of Nissan in Smyrna, Tennessee, Honda in Marysville, Ohio, Toyota in Georgetown, Kentucky, and other foreign nameplates who produce all over the United States.
It's interesting to note that, as you point out, there are a lot of other auto manufacturers and have been for many years in the U.S., and they're going through some tough times too, but apparently they made decisions that are allowing them to survive in a more financially stable fashion. What are some of these bad decisions that you say that the big three, and we're talking about GM, Ford, and Chrysler, have made over the past 10, 20, 30 years that have led them to this moment?
Well, they're the decisions with respect to the products that they've made. There's been too heavy a reliance on SUVs and pickup trucks, which have been popular with Americans until, of course, gasoline prices started rising dramatically last year. There was just not this forethought as to what would happen in a world when these products fell out of demand. Ford's product offerings are about 75% trucks and SUVs last year, and that there's been a shift over the past 15, 20 years in that direction. On the supply side, there's been really bad decisions with respect to how they've dealt with union demands. Work rules that require at GM, for example, that workers be paid 95% of their salaries when they're laid off has made it difficult for GM to respond to contracting demand and troubling consumer conditions by cutting back production. They've been really unable to do that because of these relatively fixed labor costs. And as a result, in 2001 and 2002, when we did have a small recession, GM kept producing products even though there wasn't demand for them and ended up giving discounts of $6,000 or 0% financing for 5, 6, 7 years. And that has helped to sort of bankrupt GMAC. So those kinds of decisions, it's almost like you can conduct a sixth-grade science experiment. We have the big three who use unionized labor, and their profit margins are minuscule. And then if you look at the foreign transplants, they have a much they have much more cushion because they don't use unionized labor.
Now, the idea of a bailout in some form is really nothing new. I mean, I think of Chrysler back, when was that, like 79 or 80?
Yeah.
Harley-Davidson got some help from the government, I think, in the 80s for tariffs and so forth. What role, if any, should the federal government be playing in these sorts of manufacturing entities?
I don't think there really is a role. Even if government policy were well-intentioned, and I think it often is well-intentioned, it has consequences that are not anticipated. One of the consequences that we're going to see right now is, you know, the auto industry has received a $25 billion subsidy to retool to make more fuel-efficient vehicles. The energy bill, which was passed last year, requires that U.S. producers, the average fuel efficiency of the fleet be 35 miles per gallon. Well, the big three are nowhere near that. So they got $25 billion from the federal government to retool. So effectively what government policy is doing now is incentivizing the big three to make these more fuel-efficient vehicles at a time when fuel prices are coming down through the floor again. They're going to be under $2. It's basically under $2 a gallon throughout most of the country. Americans, as green as we want to be, don't like those kinds of vehicles. We've not preferred them, and with fuel prices coming down, there's going to be much less demand for those products. So government policy is incentivizing the big three to do more of what they've been doing in the past, which is making cars that Americans don't want.
We're going to take a break right now. When we return, we will continue our discussion with Dan Eikenson, the Associate Director of the Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. And we are talking about the idea of bailing out the U.S. auto industry. Our guest is against it. We'd like to find out what you think. 800-642-1234. You can email us too at talk@WPR.org. It's 18 minutes past 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm in for Joy Cardine. Joy will be back after 8 this morning, by the way, for the week in review. We'll be taking a look back at the week that was. That's coming up with Joy Cardine after 8 o'clock this morning. This hour, we're talking with Dan Eikenson. He is the Associate Director of the Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. And we're talking about the idea that's been in the news a lot for the past few days of bailing out the auto industry. And, of course, all sorts of industries are being bailed out these days. The federal government is standing behind an awful lot of things, and the auto industry wants its share. Our guest says, don't bail them out. The big three could become the big two. And we're going to go right to the phones right now. A lot of people would like to join in on this. And let's start with Doug. And Doug is with us from Saner this morning. Hi, Doug.
Oh, good morning, Gene. Yeah, I'm afraid we're going to be hearing a lot more of this. I wanted to start off by saying that my dad retired from that General Motors plant in Janesville.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, it put a lot of food on my parents' family's table, along with some cousins and uncles. I'm for the bailout. I feel that there's too many other companies that will fail. Janesville's already mentioned a number of companies that are going to close up because of the closed down of the Janesville plant. I just wanted to say, too, that, you know, because my dad retired from General Motors, I've always driven a General Motors product myself, and I'm going to be 50 next month. I see myself driving no other product but a General Motors product. And I just feel that if we're going to bail out these AIGs and other banking institutions, which I've been fortunate to have a steady enough job, although it's slowed down some for us too, and been able to make my mortgages, which, you know, lucky, I guess, that I haven't had to face problems that a lot of people are facing. I just feel that people are not going to be able to make these mortgages if we continue to let big companies go under. You can't it's such a big problem that I know where does it end, right? But
sure.
Yeah, that's my comment. I'll take.
All right, Doug, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And Dan Eikenson, a lot of topics in there. But a couple of the points that Doug brought up. One, companies like AIG, we've heard everybody is being bailed out. And I guess one of his things is if they're going to be bailed out, why not bail out an entity like a GM or a Chrysler or a Ford that does provide an awful lot of jobs, an awful lot of income for an awful lot of people?
Yeah, I understand the sentiment. One of the reasons that I was opposed to the financial bailout was because this exact situation would arise. What I see right now is companies, industries, deploying their lobbyists to Washington to get a slice of that $700 billion pie.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as the gates were opened and Wall Street was bailed out, you saw manufacturing industries coming out with their own arguments, and really, whoever crafts the best argument, whoever can tug at the heartstrings the most, whoever can make the national security argument, is likely going to get Congress's attention. I just don't think that we can afford to do that. This $700 billion is going to run out very quickly. I'm a libertarian, and I believe in market solutions, but that doesn't mean that I'm not compassionate. I understand people are losing their jobs, and they're going to lose their jobs. That's what happens in an economic downturn. And my view is that the way to make it as quick as possible and to get us back on the road to correction as quickly as possible is not to throw a life raft or what we think is a life raft to the big three. The big three can't fit in that life raft. And in fact, they've been burning through $6 billion cash every month, which, according to my calculations, means that they're going to be back asking for more money in 4 or 5 months. There are no prospects for demand to improve in the short term, so I don't know what they're going to be doing with that $25 billion. I know that they will come back for more, so therefore it's not a solution. And really the best solution is to let one of them liquidate. And if GM were to go under, the prospects for Ford and Chrysler would be better. By definition, they'd have a larger slice of the market. And I think that we need to allow that to happen.
One of the things you mentioned was that in a lot of cases, it's not, I don't want to say that companies and industries aren't deserving, but you mentioned that it kind of depends on how they craft the message as to whether they're going to get the bailout or not. In your estimation, how have the automakers been doing in terms of crafting that message?
I think they've been doing an outstanding job, actually. I think that this lobbying blitz that we're seeing now has been in the works for quite some time. The day after the election, on November 5th, this report came out from the Center for Automotive Research, which is basically a consulting shop. It's a hired gun of the big three and the UAW. And the study that they produced spoke of massive job loss on the scale of several million jobs. It said that if one of the big three go down, then all three of them will go down. And all of the network of parts suppliers and related jobs, I think that is hyperbole. I really do not understand the economic argument that if one goes down, the others go down. I understand the argument that if one goes down, certain parts suppliers are going to have problems and will probably shut down. But I think ultimately this is a bailout for the congressional delegation from Michigan, a bailout for the leadership in Congress, for Governor Granholm. They've been promising the UAW and the Big Three all sorts of goodies from Washington for 8 years and been bumping their heads up against the wall with the Bush administration. And now there's a new sheriff in town and a larger majority for the Democrats in Congress. And I think that they need to preserve their credibility with the Big Three. And I think the message is resonating. The question really should be at this point, what is their argument going to be in March when they come back?
Let's head back to the phones, find out what listeners think. Chris is with us from Waukesha. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Yes, I just had a question, more or less a statement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything in this country is ever going to change unless we look at our culture and what's thought of as success in this country. I'm getting kind of tired of people saying, go to college, get your degree, and then they get management degrees and stuff like that. And I work with these guys. I've been a laborer for 30-some years in big distribution houses and building with my hands medical equipment and big variable speed controllers for industry, stuff like that. And I don't know how these able-bodied young men can sit there and be managers and go around and watch these people work when the jobs that they have, there's just too much bureaucracy, too much, I mean, to me, labor is everything. I mean, look at China. China, they labor, and they're sitting on piles and piles of money.
So
same thing with Nazi Germany. I mean, it took the nationalist labor movement, and look what they did. I mean, build magnificent ships and Tiger tanks and everything, and it's like you got these guys that want to go into finance and Wall Street and stuff like that and shuffle money around, and all they do is make out loans at interest rates. I mean, it's embarrassing. These men have hands like women. They don't never work honestly.
All right, Chris, I appreciate your viewpoint. I think you're getting a little off track here. But, Dan, what about that? It sounds like Chris was sort of leaning towards, you know, we have too many managers and not enough people doing actual work out there.
Well, I mean, our economy has really shifted over the years. We've heard a lot about the decline of U.S. manufacturing, which I really don't agree with. And manufacturing, up until you know this current recession, has actually been doing quite well. We've shed a lot of jobs. In 1979 was the peak year for employment in the manufacturing sector, and since then we've been shedding jobs. But manufacturing output hits new records year after year. We hear about China being this big monolithic competitor that is eating our lunch. But in reality, for every dollar of output that comes out of a Chinese factory, we produce $2.50. We account for a little over 20% of the world's value added, and China accounts for about 8%. And one of the reasons is because we're much more productive. We can produce a lot with fewer hands, and I think that's a sign of progress, something that we should be proud of, and something that raises living standards. So let's not wish for a world in which everybody has to work with their hands to make ends meet.
Let's go to Mike very quickly from Lancaster. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Well, I tend to agree with your guest. Restructuring, actually having them declare Chapter 11 and restructuring would probably be the best situation. However, there's one other thing that I called, which is my main point, which is that what if instead of giving them huge bailout, we put that money into a single-payer plan to take medical issues off the table when Big Three and other companies go into collective bargaining with unions?
You know, that is my understanding of what happened with the last contract between the UAW and GM. A lot of the healthcare commitments were taken off of GM's books, and the union became responsible for that. Healthcare is certainly a huge part of the cost to U.S. producers and the Big Three. It costs more than steel. And speaking of steel, if we look at the steel industry for a glimpse of the auto industry's future, steel was really hurting at the beginning of this decade, and there were many producers that were in bankruptcy. There was a lot of red ink, and they shed their legacy costs with a government intervention. I'm not in favor of that per se, but it was less.
And Dan, I hate to, we'll come back to the steel thing. We have to take a break right now for news, but we'll pick it back up after that. We're talking about a bailout, proposed bailout for the U.S. auto industry here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. It's 25 minutes before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm in for Joy Cardy, and Joy is going to be here after 8 o'clock this morning for the Week in Review, so stick around for that. For the rest of this hour, we're talking about proposed bailout of the U.S. auto industry. Our guest is against it, Dan Eikenson, an associate director of the Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute, and we have been talking about that for the past 35 minutes or so. And Dan Eikenson, before the break, we were talking about a similar situation in some senses that you saw with the steel industry in the early 2000s.
Yeah, I think the steel industry's experience is instructive here in the sense that in the early 2000s there were dozens of steel companies, many of whom went into bankruptcy. But the problem is that the industry wasn't able to make much of a profit. Steel is a high fixed cost industry, and you have to produce a lot to cover those fixed costs. So if you have a lot of companies in the industry, then a lot of production needs to take place. And what would happen is that even when demand was slack, companies had to produce a lot, and it just drove prices down. Eventually, they realized that, that they needed to consolidate. And in 2001, I think there were 12 companies that accounted for about 75% of hot-rolled steel production, which is the commodity steel product. In 2007, there are three that account for over 80%. And the steel industry now has some market power. The profits in the second half of this decade have been historic, at historic highs. And what got this going was their ability to get rid of some of their legacy costs. Once they were able to do that, the the buyers came in and were willing to, you know, to purchase up some of these assets and consolidate. That's the kind of thing I think that needs to happen in the auto industry. The auto industry is has very heavy legacy costs and ongoing costs in healthcare and pension funds and things like that. So I'm not advocating a government bailout, but if there is to be some sort of a bailout, it should possibly be directed at those benefits rather than helping people out by keeping bad firms afloat. Let's go directly to the people and help them out with these legacy costs.
Let's head back to the phones right now. Richard is with us from the Great Lakes Naval Station. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, gentlemen. First of all, I want to thank you for allowing me and the other callers to call in and exercise our freedom of speech, regardless of our position. So I really appreciate that.
Sure.
And in reference to the topic, we had an earlier caller named Douglas whose family or dad had retired from the industry. I'm not in the industry, never have been, but I have been part of my career stationed in Ohio, where I've had friends that are they have worked in directly in an industry or in the secondary industries of suppliers and so forth. My statement would be, position would be not to support a bailout. And the reason for my rationale is that it is time for the GM to relook at their products, as mentioned earlier by your guest, to put the products that's beneficial for the economy, the society, and the environment, and get us weaned away from that. Granted, the prices are great right now. For $1.89 that I took a trip was great, but that's not a guarantee. So we need to change, and I am a lover of old cars. I have some from the 50s to the 70s, so I love the American vehicles. But as far as for the taxpayers to support an industry that is not meeting the needs of the society and for the environment, we need to change that. And I would, selfishly, I would like all three to survive, but that way there's not a monopoly. But we need to not be the taxpayers that support these industries when they need to be responsible and make the changes like small businesses do, like families do. We need to cut the cost. So, again, thank you for the opportunity to share my my thoughts and opinions, and that's it.
Richard, thanks for the call. And Dan Eikenson, there you go, somebody who is on your side. And
yeah.
He did bring up one item, though, talking about the industry, needs to lead. And one of the industries, anyway, GM, they've got the Chevy Volt sort of somewhere on the, it's right down the pike, they promise us, a plug-in hybrid sort of car. Mm-hmm. In some regards, are they attempting to lead and they're just sort of being stymied at the moment? Or is that just sort of window dressing to larger problems that you see?
Well, I think it might just be window dressing. The Volt is not particularly economic for GM. GM has a much larger profit margin on the bigger vehicles that it produces. And that's one of the reasons that it's wanted to produce strictly the bigger vehicles. If the automakers are going to produce cars that Americans want to buy, then we can't bail them out for making bad decisions. If there are fewer producers and they are required to respond to consumer tastes, then I think that's the way we get ourselves into the future. For example, if the companies that make the right products and make the right decisions get their just rewards, in other words, get their fair share of the market and make profits, they'll be able to reinvest those profits in research and development and make the cars of the future. But if the deadwood is not cleared out and is supported by government largesse, then that penalizes those companies that would be the pioneers, because they therefore have to continue to compete with companies that, really should have gone under. So that's why one of the reasons that I'm in favor of letting the market work here.
We've touched on this subject a bit, but we had an email from Kurt in Westby. How many other businesses, large and small, would be affected by Detroit car companies if they were left to die? Aren't there many businesses around the country whose sole purpose is to make parts for the car industry? And there are a lot of businesses, industries that are related to that, Dan Eikenson. And do they fall under that same category? It's, you know, time to adapt to the marketplace or go out of business?
I think they do. Yes, there are a lot of jobs other than the primary job, a lot of businesses and a lot of jobs other than the direct big three that are affected by this. And we just, you know, this is not a youth soccer game where we don't keep score and everybody gets trophies. I mean, this is reality. And in economic contraction, people do lose their jobs. But I don't think it's anywhere near as dire as some of the reports we're hearing and some of the statistics we're hearing cited by, you know, the Michigan congressional delegation and their lobby. If GM were to liquidate, for example, I think the parts suppliers that are exclusive suppliers to GM would be in trouble. But many suppliers supply all of the big three, and the suppliers that supply Ford and Chrysler under this example would likely be doing better if GM were to go under, because they would have their primary customer would have a larger share of the auto market.
Let's head back to the phones right now. Ray is with us from New London. Hi, Ray.
Hopefully I'm not going to go through a bad sell area here, but a couple of things. Number one is this is the biggest socialization. I mean, the Democrats have been wanting to do this for a long time, and then it's President Bush that's going to get it done. Number two is the cornerstone for conservative thought is competition, and letting these companies merge is the death knell of competition for car industry in the U.S. The consumer is the one that's going to lose. We're losing anyway when we bail them out. And then just like the oil industry, whenever they started buying up the were allowed to buy up all the smaller oil companies, the independents, the oil didn't go up right away, but the price of fuel did. And so whenever you got the oil companies that own everything, the oil fields, the companies that ship it, they own those, it's going to be the same thing with the car companies, and there's no competition whatsoever. I think they should be broken up into different entities again, like Buick would be Buick, Chevy would be Chevy, that situation.
Ray, thanks for the call. And Dan Eikenson, in the case of GM, Buick hasn't been Buick since like 1912 or something. I mean, the whole purpose of GM was to be this big corporation, as I recall.
Right.
But I guess to Ray's point, two questions there. Does it matter who's sitting in the White House? And secondly, does this really eliminate competition? Are consumers going to pay higher costs for cars as a result if one of the big three goes away?
Well, it's possible that they would pay higher prices, but we can't demand of the industry that it preserve a structure that doesn't make any sense. We could have a big three and the 8 or 10 foreign nameplates that produce in the United States, all producing in the same market. And you know, this is heresy in some parts of the country. If the UAW were not involved, if the unions weren't involved and allowed labor to be a variable cost, then we would have many, many more producers in the market. If the big three actually went away, you know, there are lots of people who are mechanically inclined in our country. Americans love cars. I could see an industry arising from the ashes, sort of the way, you know, Google and some of these other companies were created in garages. You know, people tinkering in their garages and coming up with new vehicles and trying things out, and we would have, that would be a sort of pure competition. I think we certainly are going to pay. It's going to be a waste of money if we give $25 billion to the industry under the false pretenses of bailing them out, because they're not going to be bailed out. There is absolutely nothing to be done with this money except pay current operating expenses, and with no prospects for demand to improve in the near future, they will be back in March. And does it matter whether there's what party the president's from? It does, in the sense that the unions and Michigan in general really backed Barack Obama and the Democratic Party, and I think it's payback time for them. The question is whether or not President Obama will show some backbone in March and April when they come back asking for more money.
All right, we'll take a break, and when we return, we'll continue our discussion on a proposed bailout of the U.S. auto industry. I'm Gene Purcell here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8 this morning, it's the Week in Review. You can join Joy Cardine and her guests Ed Garvey and Rick Berg as they take a look back at the week that was in the news around the state and around the country. Week in Review with Joy Cardine coming up after 8. For the rest of this hour, Dan Eikenson is with us. He is the Associate Director of the Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. And we've been talking about a proposed bailout of the U.S. auto industry. We'll be getting back to phones in just a second. But Dan Eikenson, one of the things that I wanted to mention real quickly, or at least bring up real quickly, is the whole idea of the emotions, I think, surrounding the auto industry. Because you talked about, you know, the steel industry before, and that's certainly one thing. But is there an emotional aspect to this? Because steel is one thing, but cars in America and Ford and GM and Chrysler seem to me to be something else again.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the big three are iconic firms. You know, we had a song, Baseball, Hot Dogs, Apple Pie, and Chevrolet. And, you know, you look at photos throughout American history, and you see Americans working on their cars, and you get your Corvettes and your Mustangs. And it's a slice of Americana.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to recognize, however, is that, you know, we're in a globalized economy. Change happens. We've got foreign nameplate producers producing cars more efficiently and more effectively here, and they're making products that Americans want to purchase. And we need to come to the recognition that Toyota and Honda and Nissan and BMW and Kia and Hyundai, even though they're foreign nameplates, they're actually American producers. You know, they employ Americans, hardworking Americans, just like the big three do. They pay U.S. taxes, local taxes. They support local charities and softball teams. And we just need to recognize that we have an auto industry. We will always have an auto industry here. And it's there's something emotional about it, I suppose. But we needn't let that get in the way of economics.
Is there anything different between a GM going under, or say an American Motors Corporation, or a Studebaker, or, you know, a Duesenberg, or something like that? Because, you know, the 20th century is littered with the remains of car companies that came and went.
That's true. It's happened. I mean, GM is the largest of the big three. It's had all these divisions. It does employ people not only in Michigan but in other states, and you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not going to lose too much sleep if GM is to go under. I mean, this is part of a competitive process, creative destruction, as some people call it, and all I know is that the economy is going to continue to move forward. And that we can't try to stop this process by picking winners and losers.
Let's go to the phones right now, and Chet is with us from Sharon. Hi, Chet.
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity to say absolutely no bailout. When I heard the Democrats, who I voted for, proposing this, I was just outraged. You build an inferior product, you're eventually going to go out of business. I have personal experience with Chrysler. They've been building junk for two decades and should have gone out long ago. So no bailout. And in terms of the Americana part of it, I hear you there, but that is media and advertising produced. So, you know, I have empathy for the employees. I live near Janesville. However, the product is inferior. It should go. Thank you.
All right, Chet, thanks for the call. And Dan Eikenson, someone agreeing with you and actually simplifying, maybe not simplifying it too much, but being very direct about his thoughts. You build bad products, and that point could be argued, but you're going to go out of business.
That's exactly what it comes down to. I couldn't agree with his perspective more. So I don't think there's anything really to add to that.
Let's see if Mike has anything to add to it. Mike is with us from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi. Well, I agree with the previous caller and with your guests. We're looking here at a combination of stupidity on the part of the executives, the boards of the directors, executive committees who have run the auto industry for the last 20 years. You know, some of these guys are Harvard Law, you know, Yale graduates. I mean, they're supposed to be smart people. They should have seen this coming a long, long time ago. So stupidity there. On the part of the unions, you know, greed. I mean, my understanding is that they have some janitors working at GM who make $40 an hour. I mean, that's insane. So the problem is, what happens to all of those people who are, you know, depending on their pensions and all, and their health benefits that they have from these companies? I mean, it's too bad. I suppose the thing to do is let it go under and if use some of the money of the bailout to, you know, pay for those pensions, probably drastically reduced, but, you know, at least survival-type pensions, and let the auto industry rebuild itself, but, you know, without stupid people in control.
All right, Mike, thanks for the call. And what about that stupidity factor there? Because you could argue that, I suppose, that an executive at GM is stupid, but, you know, what they were doing was they were making money for the corporation, making shareholders happy. Was that stupid, or was it just short-sighted?
Well, I think what is stupid and greedy is the fact that management and the UAW got together behind closed doors, and management capitulated to unions' demands for very high wages, for work rules that are totally impracticable, for benefits that are on the verge of bankrupting these companies. And they said, well, you know, this isn't economic. This isn't really going to work. But we know the feds will bail us out because we're iconic, because we're too big to fail. So I think there was forethought that went into this. At Cato.org, our website, we have a blog also. If you click on blog, I posted something yesterday, which was a chart, which was put together by a guy named Mark Perry, who's a professor at the University of Michigan, Flint. And this picture tells the whole story. The average compensation for an hour of work at GM for a GM worker is $75. That's compensation. That's wages plus benefits.
Mm-hmm.
At Toyota, it's $48. And each is, you know, emblematic of their respective cohort. You know, the GM's prices, costs are like Ford and GM, Ford and Chrysler. Toyota's is like Honda and Nissan. With that differential, that explains it all. I mean, it's the union's demands to basically take all of the profits away, almost all of the profits away from the company that has exposed them to this kind of problem. So if we could somehow, if the big three could divorce themselves from the UAW or start from scratch with contracts that make a lot more sense, they would be in much better shape.
Do you see that really happening, though?
Well, maybe. You know, if one of them is to go under and the other two might have more leverage with the unions, you know, had Chrysler been allowed to fail back in 1979, the UAW would have had less leverage, and the big two would not be in the position that they're in today, perhaps. If it's pretty evident that this is what is bankrupting the company, then there should be a fairly strong case for management to make and for the public to make, to the unions to back down. I think they once played an important role in the American economy, but I think now they're really just hampering American businesses from competing.
As we get to the top of the hour, what do you think the chances are that this bailout is actually going to happen? I mean, as I follow the news over the last couple of days, I don't know if it seems inevitable exactly, but it does seem we're all sort of marching in a direction here.
Yeah. You know, I woke up this morning and I read some press, and I was slightly more optimistic today that there was not going to be a bailout than it was yesterday. Yesterday, I thought that that the die had been cast. But ultimately, I think the case will be made. And, you know, this is a bailout for Congress. This is a bailout for the Michigan delegation, for Jennifer Granholm. And I think that it'll clear the politicians' consciences if they are to allocate $25 billion, even though it's a waste of money. The real question is what's going to happen in March and April when I'm sure the big three will be back. At that point, if they can show some backbone and say no, then I think we will have made some progress.
Dan Eikenson, thanks for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate your time. Dan Eikenson has been with us for the past hour. We've been talking about a proposed bailout of the U.S. auto industry, Ford, GM, and Chrysler. We covered the pro side earlier on this program, and today we took a look at the case against a bailout. He is an associate director of the Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. If you'd like a copy of the program, you can get one from the radio store at 800-747-7444. You can also go to our archives at WPR.org and listen online there if you'd like. The program was produced for us this morning by Rob Ferret, and we had on-air production from Bill Martins. I'm Gene Purcell. I was in for Joy Cardine this hour. She'll be here in just a few minutes with a look at the week in review, a look at the week that was. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.